In the grand theater of life, we all seek a comeback, a resurgence, a rekindling of our inner fire. But how do we spark that flame? Welcome to Reignite Resilience. This is not just another podcast. This is a journey, a venture into the heart of human spirit, the power of resilience, and the art of reigniting our passions.
Welcome back to another episode of Reignite Resilience. I am your co-host, Natalie Davis, and I am so excited to be back with you all. Pam, how's it going today?
It is fabulous. A little sleep deprived with my new 8-week-old puppy, but I'm here.
Congratulations so on that. I think today's day two that you had the puppy.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, two nights of no sleep. It's
beautiful.
Fabulous.
We're going to get the best version of Pam today, you guys. It's going to be great.
Fabulous.
We are so excited. Today we have a special guest. I always get excited about our special guests because, as you all know, as we dive into the topic of resiliency, it's always important for us to get different perspectives. And I would have to say today is a different perspective when we're looking at resiliency. So, Pam, why don't you tell the listeners who we have on?
Yeah, and absolutely. Well, I want to start out by talking about how I met our guest.
Yes.
Which is just kind of a funny story. So I was in Minneapolis at a hotel checking in because we were going to be teaching that week at a real estate company. And we ran into Tim in the lobby, and the person I was with knew Tim. And so they started talking, and he was there for a banker's conference, right, Tim?
Yes.
Okay. So you're there for a banker's conference. He's like, well, I can get you guys into our keynote. And we're like, okay. I was like, I don't know what that is. I'm not a banker, but let's do it.
So you know what speakers love to see? Other speakers. So
Exactly. Absolutely,
it's a yes.
Exactly. So we're like, of course, I would love to. So we ended up getting in and we sat in the back, and our guest today, you will find out, is absolutely hilarious. And yeah. So I just remember laughing, like belly laughing, and a slide comes up and it says stress plus humor equals resilience. And I'm like, oh, this is why I met you in the lobby, because you need to be on our podcast.
Yeah.
And so then I reached out to you afterwards to see if you would be on it, and you graciously volunteered. So let me just read your bio really quick, because it's really impressive. So Tim Gard, CSP, CPAE, is a tears in your eyes, laugh out loud speaker who teaches people to be more resilient and resourceful, and coaches businesses on how to enhance productivity and employee enthusiasm. He has been in the business for over 20 years and is part of the National Speakers Hall of Fame. And I am just so excited for you to be here with us today to kind of share your story, how you got started in this 20 years ago, and then, you know, what are you doing now, and talk to us about humor and resilience.
Sure. Great to be here. Nice to see you again. Nice to meet you. We're resilience. For me, you know, I kind of got into the speaking business years ago. I was a welfare fraud investigator, and people were burning out all around me. I just saw such terrible things all the time. And I watched as people just burned out right and left. And eventually people started asking me, what do you do that's different? And, you know, I was telling people that I've learned to laugh at myself, that, you know, it's not about making fun of anybody, but you find that we can laugh at ourselves. And C.W. Metcalf said, laugh not with ridicule, but with objectivity and acceptance of self. And I started sharing some of the things that I did. It got to be more popular. I got hired by the federal government to oversee food stamp operations for Utah and Colorado as a food stamp fed. They started loaning me to different agencies to kind of show that, you know, I was known as the funny fed, which is kind of an oxymoron sometimes.
But yeah, it is.
People started offering me money to speak at conferences, and I had to make a decision. Do I stay with the government and get I know I'm going to get a retirement, or do I go out on my own? Mm-hmm. And my family is not really an entrepreneur family. My dad, when I told my dad, he asked me my backup plan, and I told him I'm going to car wash school on the weekend. So he... But I started out on my own. I think I did every stressful thing you could do the first year. I got divorced, sold my house, sold my car, quit my job. And I did 20 events the first year, and I've averaged between 50 and 70 events a year all over the world since then. Over COVID, it dropped significantly. But yeah. But I'm the guy that comes out and either gets the audience to open up their minds to a high content speaker like Mike Staver, or at the end to make sure that people are excited to come back, or I'm there at 1 o'clock which is when you saw me, which mm-hmm. is right after they've eaten a big pasta lunch and everybody's scared of that time.
Yes.
But
yes.
I just teach people how to use humor as a business skill to solve problems, to be more resilient, to deal with stress. And it's a lot of it is how we choose to perceive the stress.
Wow. So you take this year, that year, and you went through divorce, sold your house, sold your car, quit your job. So everything. So
that was his country song year.
That was your country song. We did have an episode about when your life is a country, a Western song. Yes. So it's kind of one of those things. So did you find that what you were doing, what you were speaking about, the humor, was that your ability to have resilience through going through all of those things?
Yeah, I think it was part of the coping. And in the last few years, as I've been writing more, you know, I go back into my childhood. My dad was in the Air Force, and my dad was this guy that went around to these radar bases in the northern states and set up new radar sites up on top of some mountain somewhere. And I would live at these small, I guess they'd have 200 military families at a small remote outpost. And then every 2 years we moved to another place. So it was every 2 years I had to move and make friends, be able to let go, start again. And, you know, when you only know that, you don't realize how uncommon that is. You know, most people, you know, they meet some kid at kindergarten and they're friends for life. And, but this ability to use humor, my older brother played music. My younger brother was in theater. I was president of everything. And it was just using humor more than anything to make friends, find the funny in different things. And that's probably always been one of my superpowers, is being able to see things and really see the funny where other people miss it.
I love it. Well, I know Natalie and I, when I was going through my divorce, like Natalie was the person I called, and she always left me laughing.
Yes.
And so I think humor has kind of always been something that both of us have used when we're in stressful situations.
Absolutely. It's amplified in high stress situations for sure.
we've been in several together.
Yes.
When we've gone through just emotional stressful things. Yeah. And I know it's something that I grew up with because my dad was very much that sarcastic, funny guy. My mom hated it, but unfortunately, all three of us kids ended up with the same trait that my dad has, which drives my mom crazy when we're together. But it definitely has been a huge part of my life on getting through different things that I've dealt with in my personal life. So hearing your journey when you were young and the moving all the time, that would make such sense that you used humor as your kind of superpower to get through it. So I love it.
Well, and when I found that I could show other people how to do it, that's really when things started to click. You know, it's like when you were there, I had a new section I added to the program where it's just called reverse thinking, where whenever you're in a hurry to go somewhere, you know you're going to get behind somebody driving 10 miles an hour or you're going to hit every red light along the way. And on the way there that day, on the way to the airport the day before, if for some reason the Uber driver is hitting every red light and he started to get upset. And I said, you know, there's 21 red lights in between my house and Portland International Airport. And I said, my personal best is 7. I've hit 7 red lights in a row. And he goes, what? He said, your personal best? I said, yeah, that's, you know, when you're really in a hurry, you hit every red light. And I said, it's 7 in a row. You can't have a break or you start over. And so we got 6 and then we hit 7 and there's actually 2 more stoplights before we get to PDX. And we come up to one of them and it's green and he slows down. And we both laughed about it. You know, it takes that thing and kind of turns it around. And then the second part is that you then have to say to yourself, how can I avoid this in the future?
Yeah.
Meaning, how do you insulate yourself from running late and being at the mercy of stoplights? Well, I take the first flight out every time I can because it's the most on-time flight. It's almost guaranteed it's going to go out. Mm-hmm. You don't put yourself into stress. So it's two parts.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I love going into it with that mindset that you went into it, you know. My personal best is 7. He was probably like, I've never heard that
exactly,
before.
Exactly. Exactly. Whereas like, most people would yell at their driver, right, for hitting every light and not getting them there on time.
Yeah,
I like that. Much better approach.
I love it.
Well, Tim, talk a little bit about your work with companies and organizations. You said that you help them in utilizing humor in solving their problems. Tell us what that looks like.
Well, you know, sometimes it's as simple as they'll have, they say our meetings last forever. And I've just told them, you know, sit down meetings, I think, are a thing of the past. Most of the time, I recommend you go into a meeting, you're standing up. If you're sitting down, you're prepared to go as long as it needs to be. If you're standing up, people are more apt to want to get done and have a set agenda, no more than 3 items. And the first one should always be what they're doing right. It shouldn't be you hold that meeting until you've got every problem lined up for the last 3 months. It's what most people put themselves up to fail. And so if people know that there's just going to be a short meeting, and it's going to cover a couple of things, they'll deal with it. But I've been in meetings so bad, you want to fake a heart attack to get out of it. Or, you know, it's like I tell my boss, you can hit me in the face if I don't have to go. It's a boring meeting. And one of the meetings I told that story that I'm sitting in a meeting, I almost fall asleep and my boss is sitting next to me and I didn't know what to do. And I thought of that movie MacGyver where he could make something out of anything. And so I grabbed my pen and I threw it out the door and I go, is that my pen? You know, and just go darting out the door and wondered if I got in trouble. And a few minutes later, another pen goes shooting out the door and it's him. So I knew I'm all right. But
we call those trendsetters. That's awesome, Tim. You become a trendsetter in that moment.
People, a lot of times when they're looking at the problems, it's in communication, it's practices that are countercultural. You know, it's like a lot of businesses sometimes have policies and procedures designed to solve some problem they're having, but they're not kind to the customers. You know, it's like we shouldn't input policies that are unkind to customers. In Las Vegas, I went to check into an event and they couldn't let me have the room until after 1 o'clock unless I paid a $200 fee. And I said, okay. And the people that hired me go, yeah, just pay it, you know, because we got to get him in here and get him checked in. Well, then a few minutes later, the guy goes, well, I don't have any rooms. I said,
oh my goodness.
You just had me pay to check in early. Well, if we had a room, you could check here. And about this time, the guy next to me, the customer is yelling at the clerk for the exact same reason. Oh. And so somebody had that bright idea at that hotel. And all it did was cause their counter people, the people up, the reception people, to be put under stress all day long for rules they didn't put in. Things like that.
Yeah.
I go in and look at the things that cause them stress.
I love that.
And I think I want to make sure that the listeners don't miss the key points. Like you said, if you're in those meetings or you're hosting meetings and you're not setting an agenda, making sure that your agenda is no longer than 3 items, right? Like that's a key piece. And starting out positive before diving into what's not working. Mm-hmm. And standing up. I don't think I've ever been in a meeting where we've stood the entire meeting.
I've been in a couple, but it was during the turn of the market and they got rid of all the furniture. And so we had to stand.
That was a different reason.
And we stood in a circle. So it wasn't because, you know, of, you know, forethought like what you said, where, you know, stand up and then let's move on.
Well, I like it. I mean, both you and I typically work from a sit to stand station and we're usually in the standing on the sit to stand station. So we know that there is tremendous benefit for us when we're working with clients, when we're teaching in that stance. And so it doesn't surprise me that the same would apply if you're hosting meetings.
Well, and I think the subconscious message is we're not going to be here very long.
Exactly.
Yeah. Rather than you see somebody come down and they're basically setting up their temporary desk with all the stuff because they know they're going to be there. And and it doesn't work all the time. You know, it's all about leadership is how open they are to making changes or trying things. And even just doing things like we're having a stand up meeting, which almost implies it's quick.
Yes.
Yeah.
So ideas like that. The other one would be listening. And I know Pam was in one of the classes I talked about. Folks are really struggling right now with the ability to really pay attention and listen, to turn off their cell phones, you know, for even a few seconds. And unless you've got the nuclear detonation codes the last six digits needed to defuse a bomb.
You can set your phone down.
You should be able to put your phone down. And so a lot of them, not all problems, and really specifically, not all problems can be solved with humor, but some can, and some in just looking at the solutions, the funny solutions, we're able to find other ideas.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wonderful.
So, Tim, so you've been doing this for 20 years, and I'm assuming you've spoken to a multitude of different companies, different industries, all over the world. Have there been significant changes that you've seen since, you know, 20 years ago to today, in the way people deal with stress, the way they're, you know, how they're resilient with things that happen, anything like that? I'm assuming you've seen something.
I think that resilience is something now that's recognized mm-hmm. as a real thing. I do believe that, you know, there were times when your boss would say, you know, suck it up. You're going to have stress. Deal with it. Get in there and get the job done. Mm-hmm. People are realizing that they're going to lose employees. They're going to have lower production if they're stressed out. But more than anything, you know, we were talking earlier, the different age groups that are coming in the workplace right now, it's more important to several of the age groups about being appreciated and about understanding the bigger picture, things like that. But, you know, I think there was a time where this person does this widget and this person does that widget. Nobody knows how they all go together. I think that's changing. I think people understand that it's not just going to happen by accident, that you have to do something, learn about meditation, do mm-hmm. hot yoga, combine the two. I mean, I don't know. It's to me, a lot of it has been with stress and resilience is that it's a long-term goal. It's not like I've reached resilience, you know, I've arrived and now the world is mine. It's not like that. It's a never-ending journey. If you can have fun on that journey, then why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the science is there that looks at all the, you know, I mean, I have so much science that backs this up about the endorphins in the brain and about laughing and how that works about, you know, when you use humor and problem solving, you know, and you're laughing about some of the problems. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, I told that story. I'm a Vietnam veteran and I was there when we evacuated Vietnam, and I was on board the USS Midway when we filled up the flight deck with helicopters and the hangar bay and nobody knew what to do. People were ditching the helicopters out in the ocean. One of the officers said, let's push them over the side. Mm. And that's what we did. I mean, we took the people off first, but it's said as a joke, ends up saving lives.
Yeah.
But as far as something that's changed today, I think that it is more, it's more something that people will agree with and they need to do something. But mm-hmm. if humor isn't your bag, do something to deal mm-hmm. with the stress.
I love it. Well, you went through, so as a speaker going through COVID, you went from having a lot of things, you know, gigs during the year to having it kind of all stop. What did you do to get through that period of time?
I drove my wife crazy, I think is what I did. I went up to her office when my wife has a wellness company here in Portland, and she was running out of our home too. And I went up to her office and there was a sign on the door that said, no boys allowed, girls only club. So, you know, it's a really good question. I really never thought I was addicted to the stage. Okay. But when I take the cats into the vet, I'm in performing for the vet tech. It's something I really started paying attention to is you do get used to it. And it's something where you really have to work at enjoying it sometimes when you're on stage, regardless of your mood. Yeah. So, you know, when I was home, I learned how to do, I learned how to do virtual meetings. You know, I did several of those, but it is different. The in-person meetings are radically different, and you know, steel sharpens steel. When you're there together, it's not just the training or those things, mm-hmm. but I love talking with people. And when I'm traveling, I'm talking with people, and you know, it was one of those things that really made me appreciate that I can have breakfast in Portland and dinner in New York. You know, that there's a magic to all of this going on. And when there are problems in travel, I don't really get irritated very much, but even less so now. I'm very appreciative about the opportunity to go do this. But yeah, it really was difficult. I did things like I actually would watch the old Carol Burnett reruns with Harvey Conway, you know, and Tim, you know, they were always trying to make each other's laugh. And those are some of the things that I did. I didn't really get into binge watching a show for 12, you know, years worth of episodes or something, but it really was. I'm more appreciative too about making sure I don't use speaker talk with my wife. You know, it's not like you're having a discussion and you go, emotions aren't good or bad. They just are, you know, you can't do things like that. So, I think most speakers, a lot of speakers got out of the business. For me, it made me to have a bigger respect for the platform than ever before.
I love that.
Beautiful. And what I hear, just that thread that runs through it, is just being able to find gratitude in everything, which we talk about so much on the show, not just simply having gratitude, but actually recording it and documenting it. So that's an important piece for us as well. So that's really what carried him through, just that transition. And there were months that I know that speakers went through that they did not know what they were going to do. I mean, and you're talking about replacing your income and what that's going to look like and what the future of the speaking business looks like. And here we are. I think we've come out on the other side.
Yeah. Well, and I always used to tell people there's always going to be meetings and there's always going to be a need for speakers, because there's such a small percentage of people that aren't just comfortable being in front of an audience, but who crave it and are able to consistently hit a home run every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Well, over the past 20 years, Tim, I'd love to hear like the best and worst. So in terms, the best and worst, we'll talk about it first from an organizational piece. And then I'd love to hear your own personal best and worst. But what is like the biggest breakthrough that you've seen for a company that you've worked with when you've started to incorporate humor into problem solving? And then the worst, where it probably wasn't adopted as seamlessly.
Well, I'll actually start with the worst of the one that I think had the less impact. I had a friend that was sick, and speakers don't have sick leave. So what you have to do is you have to get another speaker to fill in for you. Yeah. And one of my best friends, another speaker friend, was speaking in Ohio for a lumber mill. It was an appreciation event for the people that, you know, their customers. So at the last minute, I literally jumped on a plane, went to Ohio. Next thing I'm at the hotel, they pick me up and I hadn't even hardly had time to talk to the customer. And we get to these fairgrounds, there's no cars out front. And I thought, well, that's odd. And we must be really early. And we go inside and it's, their customers are Amish. And so I'm a guy talking about airline travel and change, having a discussion with 400 Amish people where they're not really big on Velcro or buttons. And And so I really struggled with that one. I tell a story about being the big sweaty guy in the middle seat on airplanes. And I changed it to the big sweaty guy in the middle seat on the buggies. And that was even funnier because they only seat two. But I'll say, when I was done with that one, I had my back of my shirt was wet. I was sweating that one out. And When I got out of there, I called him up. The first thing I did was, he goes, "How'd it go?" And I goes, "You know, you could have told me they were Amish."
Yes, that would have helped.
They're wonderful people, and I did get them laughing. We had to make, but it was probably one of the most difficult, and one that I don't think they're probably going to incorporate my ideas into their
But kudos to you for pivoting that quickly. Yes. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah,
you have to do it. You know, you gotta get up there. And. And I guess, you know, one of the best ones for me was Million Dollar Roundtable. From start to finish, they're probably one of the most organized groups in the world. And everything is just top of the line. In the end, you've got between 10 and 14,000 people in an audience with 14 different interpreters. And I learned to say hello in every language. You know, I walk up and, you know, I'm talking in each one of them. And then at the rehearsal, I told a story that was pretty funny. And the video they saw of me showed it being translated to two other languages. And when I told the story, the group laughed, the English speakers laughed, And then the French people laughed. And then the Chinese delegation over here laughed. And I said it was the laugh heard around the world. But
yes,
but it was so when I had it, it was so big. We were at the rehearsal and one of the ladies that had hired me said, Mr. Gard, you know, that laugh takes up a lot of time. When we have 14 different ones, it's going to take a while to cycle around. And I said, if she said, is that the best use of your time? Because you only have 20 minutes. And I said, if I'm known as the man that if I'm known as the person that got the biggest laugh at MDRT, I can live with it. And if you're the person that brought that person in, I hope you would be successful too.
Yeah, I love that.
In the end, it did that. I mean, it was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. And then afterwards, I had a gentleman come up to me and he said, Mr. Gard, you know, if they say that laughter is the best medicine, he said, I have prostate cancer, or he said, I have pancreatic cancer. You might have given me some extra time.
Mm. Wow.
And he left, you know, and you like to think that I went and did that for 10,000, 12,000 people, but I came there so he could hear me.
Yeah, I love that.
And those are the ones that stick with me the most. But yeah, I would say MDRT, that would be the most memorable.
At the top. I love that.
This makes me think of, and I just recently watched it because I knew we were going to be talking to you, the Coca-Cola commercial where they paid the gentleman to get onto the subway. And all he does is he looks at a screen and he starts to laugh. And he laughs harder and harder and harder. And they're just panning around the subway. And it's all of these people in their own bubbles, on their phones, not interacting. And by the end, everybody was smiling and laughing and looking at each other. And it's probably one of my favorite and probably one of the most. And nobody talks in it. Like there's no talking.
No spoken word. Yeah.
Just words. Yeah. It's just laughing.
We all smile and laugh in the same language.
Yeah.
It unites us. And people don't really realize that. And when it's like I said, with MDRT, it was like, here are all these languages, but it's all the same when they get going.
I love it.
And I just feel that we seek that out more. And as far as resilience goes, we seek those people that are laughing to be around. Yeah. The people, you know, you do business with those you like. Yeah. It increases that factor also. From a business standpoint, it's a pretty easy sell.
Mm-hmm. I love it. What has been your favorite group to talk to? You know, you've talked to obviously bankers, this $1 million. You've done a lot of different. What's been your favorite? And is it the Amish?
Because I was an eligibility caseworker, I get invited to speak at those events. Okay. And it's especially memorable because I tell the stories of things that happened to me while I was doing their job. And I actually understand what they do. So these folks that determine welfare benefits, they have people that have waited too long to come in and are desperate. They have some people come in and they're not telling the truth. There's all these different things going on. And so when I'm able to talk at human services groups, I think that's probably where I do some of my best work because I'm so emotionally vested in it. You know, I've been in sales and marketing and I built campers and trailers. But that line of work is done by very special people. And, you know, it takes almost 2 years to bring them up to the where they can distribute benefits. And what's odd is, you know, they may hand out several million of benefits. You know, they're somebody who's really have to work at being resilient or they burn out.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably my favorite group and one that I'm the most emotionally vested with when I'm on stage.
Well, and Tim, you talk about burnout, and we touch on that quite a bit here on the podcast. What are you seeing in terms of levels of burnout as you're traveling across the country or globe right now? And what is like your top three pieces of advice that you would give to folks if they are on the verge of experiencing it?
Well, you know, burnout, I think after when 9/11 happened, people were so polite and nice on the airplanes for a long time afterwards. And when it switched back over to angry travelers, it switched big time.
Yeah.
When we came back from COVID, same thing. I've never, you know, I wrote a book called Just Plain Funny. And I, in my, you know, in it, I talk about the fact that whoever's in the middle seat gets both armrests on either side, and the person in the window seat gets the left armrest, the person on the aisle seat gets the right one.
Yeah.
And about what you can change seats for, but people are getting on the planes anymore without any prior planning. You know, a family will go on with just six kids. They're all over the plane. They want everybody to move so they can sit together. And you know, it's a lot of people put themselves in distress. But, you know, I guess what I'd say is I'm seeing more people travel in shorter tempers. People lose their tempers very quickly. I think that's one of the things that I'm seeing. I think that the second thing would be I'm seeing a real change in, you know, the people that I've tried to hire here in my office, even, is that I'm not seeing as many people seem to want to have a job. You know, and I mean, I'm seeing a lot of employers are telling me we just can't get people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where they've gone to. You know, I somewhere there's a whole group of people that have money that don't need work anymore. But
yes,
it's not me.
No,
I'm curious. I keep asking the same thing. I'm like, where is everyone? I don't understand.
Yeah. They're all gone. But you know, I'm seeing that. And I think that one of the other things is that as different age groups come in, it seems like as things change more and more, I think that I haven't found all of the aspects of when this shakes itself out. I hope something really positive comes out of it. You know, you have a lot of people that want to work from home that shouldn't. There are people that should not work from home that require supervision.
Right.
There are people that do well at home. I mean, there's all these things going on. I think I'd say the third thing would just be uncertainty. That I don't think people are, it's not about uncertainty about banks, or it's an uncertainty in general, is that we have now seen how much the world can change. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, you know, people need hope more than any other thing. They just need hope. And that's why I've really been enjoying when I've been traveling and talking to people, is that that's something I hear back from people at the conferences, is that laughter gives them hope. I don't know if that answers your question. I don't know if that fits it, but there's a lot of different things going on. But I do think that people now are beginning to be more towards hope. They're getting more positive about it.
We hope that you've enjoyed part one of our two-part series on humor. Make sure that you come back and join us as we continue to learn how humor can help individuals navigate through resiliency. We'll see you soon. Thank you for joining us today. Remember to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with others who are seeking to reignite their resilience. Stay tuned for our upcoming episodes, where we'll continue to explore the remarkable power of resilience. Until next time, keep the fire of resilience burning bright in your hearts. Bye, guys.